Barbarian.
And I'm on board as well.
Excellent. I'm Sean Vieira.
And I'm John Connolly.
And this is Andrew Stein.
And we, together, are Excollegiate.
Welcome to the internet. This call is being recorded. Please insert $500 for your next save.
Yeah, it's like crack. First few hits are always free.
Come here, little kids. Got something for you to try. And we're talking about the higher things, though. So I'm wondering if there's a website out there for, like, justice. I think I'm in love.
I think it's come now. I just think it's Plato lust.
One may have a base and visceral desire for the higher things. That's philosophically possible, right?
Maybe. I'm wondering if it's biologically possible.
Andrew, I'm disappointed. MarlonBrandoLookalikes.com does not exist.
I know, it's too bad. You know what? You can make it.
I could. I don't know what I'd put there. With pictures of me. Not Freudian at all. And it changes the dynamic of that title so much when you have 12 perverted angry men.
They're all in a room together.
Not Freudian at all.
That's rather insane.
Okay.
Was that Pamela Sean right there?
Yes, that was Pamela. I'm just seeing how well Pamela is going to work to see if it's worth the $30. Well, yeah.
Because it says Sean Vieira says, and then I heard this woman say, "This call is being recorded."
Recorded. Yes. Yes, she's very, very polite, Pamela is. And wants to make sure that everybody knows that whatever they're saying is on the record.
She wants your business.
She wants to.
Yes.
That sounds so incredibly wrong.
It is wrong.
She wants your business. What, a website out there for phones?
Yes, there is.
And we're talking about the higher things, though. So I'm wondering if there's a website out there for, like, justice. You know?
Yeah.
That, like,
www.justice.com. Let me double check it.
What was it? We were talking about like awful, awful. What do you call it? Names? No, that's
It's Find Law for legal professionals.
Find Law for legal professionals. Yeah. It's a database for lawyers. If you're a lawyer, you can go there and find one.
The easy way to do it.
Yeah.
Do they have criminal attorneys?
It makes me
this site.
Where's the Cochrane firm?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the first thing that Andrew goes to. Where are the criminal attorneys? He knows he's.
I want OJ's lawyer.
He knows what he's going to do. Johnny Cochran is dead. If it doesn't fit, you must quit. It's like, let's see what rhymes you're making now.
Yeah, well, more proof that.
So, but no, I find it very, very interesting.
I don't even dare imagine.
Perspective
that
Andrew's first impulse is to go for the criminal lawyers and find them.
Well, if it was a Freudian perspective, you
from
would
a Freudian perspective
interpreted that sexually, John.
Andrew, there's a website out there for anything.
Well, we didn't get his interpretation.
Is there a website for websites?
Yes, there is. Website.com.
Is this a Freudian website.com?
I don't know.
I'm gonna see.
I'm loading it right now. We'll see what it comes. Website.com. Everything a website needs. Not Freudian at all. That's not open to interpretation. Everything a website needs.
It could be weirder. Go to www.com.
I have not.
Yeah.
The web starts here. It looks like it's blue, gray, and white. Nothing.
Yep.
It's
the beginning. And like a point, has no
point
dimensionality.
I see. So this is Google assumes you know how to do an internet search.
Yes,
this one is like, welcome to the internet. If you need email, we have it here. Yes. If you're looking for searches, we have them preloaded for you.
And if you are in any way a techie, we'll register your particular site for you.
You'd be like, my name is Andrew at www.com.
Yeah. You know what's really horrible about that, though? I'm pretty sure that that would fail most regexes that people have written to verify that that's actually an email address.
I'm tempted to switch over. Just
so you could.
Identity. You get that much. www.com. You skip all expectations for anything in the middle.
Yeah, that means that people are going to fill it in with whatever they happen to think about. So people are going to go home and try and remember JP Connolly at www.rabbitbunnies.com.
JP Connolly at www.marlbrandoflookalikes.com.
I would kill for that. Okay, I need to now go check and see if that is actually a domain that offers email.
Whoa. Uh-huh. Rabbitbunnies.com. Directory listing denied. This virtual directory does not allow contents to be listed.
Rabbit knees.
Someone
I'm
in the CIA or even the military. Operation Rabbit Bunny. It's copyright. You're just not allowed to do this. All right, and Andrew, I'm disappointed. MarlonBrandoLookalikes.com does not exist.
I know, it's too bad. You know what? You can make it.
I could. I don't know what I'd put there, but pictures of me.
Exactly.
MarlonBrandoLookalikes.com. Again, this is an age where abbreviation meets terminal velocity, so if you have to say it's too long, it's going to die.
Well, you can call it NAMBLA, National Association of Marlon Brando Lookalikes.
I have no response to that.
Oh my word.
I have no idea what to say.
I wish I was creative enough to make that up myself.
I don't think there is anything to say. You just got Andrew-fied.
You did?
Yeah, you didn't see that?
I wasn't letting
you. It was on our blog. You didn't read the post. You just went to the comments.
I may have read it. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you did.
Okay, so what do you want me to do? What does that mean?
I don't know.
It's on the...
All right. If you'd read the blog post, I said, look, we ended up sounding like...
Blog.
Or I could,
again.
Like, I could
we'll
talk
read it out loud.
All right. Here's my blog. No, look. I basically said I want someone to kind of chair the session.
Oh, no.
To kind of...
No, don't do that.
Drive
that
things.
Will be dead.
Because last time, we ended up lost for words, and then we ended up having to cobble this thing together where I'm talking about singing and dancing and chickens and... whatever. You know, just all the stuff that gets...
Singing, dancing, and chickens are awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and dinosaurs. Dinosaurs. I finally caught up with the dinosaur comics. I'm all read up on that.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
You've read them all.
Yeah, I've read them all. Yeah. I read them all in the last
Let's
2 weeks.
Just show on,
you know
on singing.
You email the dude that does
tonight.
Those and tell them,
yes.
I read all the dinosaur comics in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, my word.
You're awesome. Give me a prize.
There was one of them in the last couple years worth of the comics where they just said that any movie title
you will then wind
you can
up
spice
being the
up,
subject of the next dinosaur
better
comic.
When you put the word friggin' in your title. So you have Back to the Friggin' Future.
Back to the Friggin' Future.
You know, those sorts of things.
Lord of the Friggin' Spies.
It really does work. You know. It actually
no, no, no,
Lord of the
friggin'
Rings.
You can extend it to anything with an
Dude.
Actual multiple word title. Yeah, like dinosaur friggin' comics.
No, it's
to
friggin'
kill
dinosaur
a friggin'
friggin'
bird.
Friggin' dinosaur friggin'.
Friggin' 12 friggin' angry men. No.
12 friggin' angry men. Heck
so every
yeah.
friggin' you
oh,
multiply
yeah.
it.
You know, this also works with the word.
Okay, there comes a point where adding freaking
no,
as
but
space.
It also works with perverted. So you get
friggin'
back to the perverted future.
So if we called friggin' X friggin'
perverted, 12 perverted angry men.
It would be like friggin'
yes.
much cooler than it is.
And it changes the dynamic of that title so much when you have 12 perverted angry men.
Now that really, they're all in a room together.
12 friggin' perverted angry men.
In their socks.
Joy.
Would we be censored if we were doing this
live? Are we leaving
like,
up to the imagination
live?
Whether there is anything else but socks? Okay.
Not too badly.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
We are, how do you say,
Yeah.
There's a word for how bad we are.
We would not be doing this live.
Ben, Ugandan terrorists would be hired to assassinate us. But not like assassinate us with guns. Assassinate us with like...
with their fingernails?
Yeah. Basically, they would hang us with our own intestines.
That sounds painful. That sounds painful.
Yes, they would be imaginative.
Good times. Good times. For the gas, there's gas prices forced up the price of software. I will never forgive you, Saudis.
Well, you see, I'm not quite sure that gas is responsible. Indirectly, perhaps, because it forced up the price of Cheetos. And as we all know, programmers program better when consuming Cheetos. And therefore, as they had to, the software company had to pay more to feed their programmers, then they had to charge more for their software. But I think it's probably principally the Cheeto company's fault. Because
I don't know about either of you guys, have either of you ever felt deep, lasting, abiding mistrust for that freaking Cheetos cheetah?
I haven't actually seen the Cheetos cheetah in years, actually.
Yeah, but like, just remember back to those commercials. Like, I don't know if it was because I could never see his eyes, but like, I never really felt like I could trust that guy. He's kind of leaning against the street sign, kind of like loitering. It's like, what? Whatever. You know, I don't trust you. You're some dude on the street corner with sunglasses who's trying to peddle these cheesy delectables. Like first tries free, kids. You know. And then you know that you're a Cheetos junkie.
While wearing a horrible orange black striped kid.
Yeah, well,
I've seen people reduced to quivering piles of flesh simply because they couldn't get their Cheetos for the day. I've never been into Cheetos. I think that's primarily because that Cheetos cheetah just looked very shifty.
Well, I think it was because I was just brought up better than that.
So now Cheetos are better than you.
So you're saying that I was brought up horribly because I like Cheetos?
He and his pothead friend, I don't know.
Hell!
I mean, I don't do drugs like that.
I beat you later. Oh, my word.
And why would you want to know that information?
This would be a good time to say, I know where you sleep.
All right, so, anyway, I brought this up a little bit ago. Andrew has this certain responsibilities by popular vote.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
He's shirked yet again. I brought this up. He managed to shift the conversation topic over to...
You want me to drive the conversation? Mm-hmm. I can do that.
Cheetos.
I mean, I got a lot of talks I want to talk about. I didn't shift up. It was you, man.
It was not me. Okay, that means
you brought up the Cheetos, man. You brought up the Cheetos cheetah.
I brought up the cheetah, but Sean brought up Cheetos and programmers. I do believe the recording will bear that out.
I do have to own up to that. I fast.
All right, Andrew wants to know if we want to talk about philosophy. Sean says absolutely.
Going to put the...
And then Andrew says reply in text.
Okay, I'm trying to do this sub-conversation so we can like directly the whole thing without actually...
I cannot talk about one thing and think about something else.
But
so
you see,
if you want to get airtime,
I'm
typing in a
response.
That's fine.
Two lobes. One lobe can do the word, the other lobe can do the talking.
Okay, only if one is creative and one is practical.
Exactly, which is why we have the emoticons. Right, we have to communicate in the chat via emoticons, because that way the creative side of our brain can converse on the sub-verbal level. Mm-hmm. But as you will note, I am talking up a storm and at the same time putting tons and tons of things into the emoticons.
Yeah, but you're just picking them off a menu. You're not typing
pandas. Exactly. This is the creative side of my brain being warm and sunny. See? However, I think that talking about philosophy would be a very good idea.
Yeah, who wants to?
The question, of course, is do we desire to talk seriously about philosophy, or do we just want to laugh at Nietzscheans?
This or that, what aspect?
Because we have our options open for us.
Needle about today.
I was hoping for something.
Something what?
Something. something simple. There's a notion about philosophy going around, or at least philosophy as a discipline in general, that it's quite current, quite popular, that it's all words, all semantics.
Okay.
There's this one paper I had read earlier by some dude on the internet who is widely read.
If you believe internet captions.
Ah, yes.
Oh, no, no, no. This dude is definitely widely read. He's also very, very wealthy. I'm trying to find in this particular paper where the particular thing is that I took a
serious umbrage with or agreed with seriously.
Oh, yes. I'm trying to look.
Okay. Well, while you do that, hang on. I'm going to get away from my desk for just a second here.
Roger that.
Well, this is not
right, I'm back.
Okay. John, I'm moving down. Let me see. Here, I can send you a link to the paper,
yeah.
And we can read it together.
Oh, right, yeah.
Here, just a second.
All right. Let's see what this is all about here.
Aha. Got it.
So the paper, in a nutshell, is a discussion of philosophy, philosophy in general, versus science and the uselessness of the former in comparison to the usefulness of the latter. Which is, and we have the notion, and he goes and the fellow in question discusses his own reading of Aristotle, which he did without any sort of guidance back in high school, and which he took to mean that Aristotle's goal, okay, here it is, Aristotle's goal was to find the most general of general principles. The examples he gives are convincing. An ordinary worker builds things a certain way out of habit. A master craftsman can do more because he grasps the underlying principles. The trend is clear. The more general the knowledge, the more admirable it is. But he makes a mistake, possibly the most important mistake in the history of philosophy. He has noticed that theoretical knowledge is often acquired for its own sake out of curiosity, rather than for any practical need. So he proposes that there are two kinds of theoretical knowledge, some that's useful in practical matters and some that isn't. Since people interested in the latter are interested in for its own sake, it must be more noble. So he sets as his goal in the metaphysics the exploration of knowledge that has no practical use, which means no alarms go off when he takes on a grand, vaguely understood questions and ends up getting lost in a sea of words, which is actually, that sums up the attitude of the article. Now,
yeah,
I'm going to throw that at you, and I'm going to let you. I'm going to bounce out. Give me your opinions on that.
You know what? I think he makes a serious.
He does.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean this. Look, I read from Chris more disillusioned and fed up with the whole kit and caboodle of study of philosophy than when I went to. You know, and
okay,
honestly. If philosophy does not serve some purpose, I agree with him wholeheartedly. There's no real reason to do it. In terms of understanding being as being, I honestly, I'm not interested. Insofar as things go, I question the value of it to a large extent. What does it do for anyone in their lives? It seems a waste of time to me.
A waste of time to attempt to understand the way things are, or to attempt to understand.
Are you going to say the way things are is not the truth?
Touche. Touche.
Physics studies the way things are.
No, insofar as it goes,
physics studies the truth. But physics is
really
far more clear than metaphysics.
Well, it depends on what you mean by clear.
Physics is.
There are certain branches of physics which how do you say, Baroque?
There are also certain branches of physics that are not even considered to be reflecting
certain
the truth, or we're not even sure if they're reflecting the truth. But insofar as they are reflecting the way things are, for sure, insofar as they are reflecting the truth, it's a much more straightforward system of understanding the world than, say, Aristotelianism, or any of these sort of, like, farther and farther afield things. Because ultimately, I think that your end result is going to be the Cartesian fallacy, and everyone gets stuck in this meaninglessness of being. And Nietzsche, I think if people had de-emphasized the study of philosophy, we wouldn't have the whole postmodern philosophy behind us. We still have to deal with pragmatism, and we still have to deal with man being a spiritual being in a physical world. But I honestly think that a lot of the harmful philosophy would have been avoided, and I also think that liberal arts students would have saved
John,
a lot of time.
You're reminding me.
You do realize, John, that the whole the rise of the supposed bad philosophies occurred out of the same impetus, or very similar impetus, as the rise of what's the word again?
Empirical knowledge.
Oh, there you go. Empiricism. There you go. Same time as the rise of empiricism.
Now look, I'm all for saying that science can reflect some of the truth, but that it doesn't encompass all of the truth.
Right.
But insofar as looking at human beings have a certain amount of time in their life. They are called to do certain things with their lives. Right. It's very nice to sit back and contemplate prime matter or whatever your choice is. But I don't see how that actually fits into human beings going about their business, doing things. How it gets overemphasized. It's too big. It's too unwieldy. It actually was for a long time. It was the juggernaut that drove the university system. So it's great. We get the university out of it. But now we have this sort of like, when you get the liberal arts thing, it's almost like philosophy and then everything else. And you get philosophers. Why is anyone supposed to be a philosopher? I think you're supposed to be a philosopher. You should know things about philosophy, things that help you spiritually, I guess, to know yourself better. But the vast majority of philosophy does not actually go under that heading.
You see, John, my favorite thing with all the philosophers is that the ultimate conclusion of most of their course of study is that philosophy is the best course of study.
Yes.
That was Plato's big thing. Philosophers are the best. That I went through all this philosophy to show you. Philosophers are the best.
Right. it's akin to a subcommittee in the Senate on subcommittees to prove that subcommittees are a good thing.
No, not entirely, because while the subcommittee on subcommittees was set up to determine whether or not subcommittees are a good thing, the philosophers did not get together to determine whether or not philosophers were a good thing. They got together to attempt to understand something about the truth of the world that they were living in.
And
what they wound up finding out was, oh my, what we're studying here happens to be the big thing. That would
philosophy and theology separate.
Yeah.
You have a theologian here, and everything is proper to him, and he borrows some things from philosophy, particularly large amounts of methodology and certain other ideas and things like that. And then you have the philosopher, and just what's proper to him. Reason alone, thinking about abstract things. You end with the theologian is a man who comes closer to God, and the philosopher is a guy who sits under a tree and doesn't do much, and in this day and age, the philosopher is a guy who gets paid to do so, probably from a federal grant.
Not too many of them. But, see, here's the thing. Given that, you have an argument against any pursuit of empirical knowledge that doesn't have an immediate and pragmatic visible result. So the study of certain branches of quantum physics, because it's not guaranteed to produce anything except more theories about slightly more obtuse particles and slightly more obtuse particles that someday may perhaps have some effect on the
certain question.
Tendencies and
that
technology
is an excellent question.
In you know
Why?
The course of Western civilization.
You know, quantum physics has that low.
Why are quantum physicists spending so much time sitting in a sterilized lab?
Especially because it's in the realm of the sciences. If quantum physics can't take us to the moon and beyond, if quantum physics isn't really, if it's mm-hmm. just kind of.
Now, how are you defining true adding, positive
if
change?
If it's adding to stuff that may be true, but which really falls under more trivia of the universe, stuff we actually need to pay attention mm-hmm. to, it seems a waste of time.
So basically,
if we spend 2,000 years mm-hmm. working at quantum physics, what are we going to get out of it? Mm-hmm. The human race.
No, I don't think that the human race is going to be doing quantum physics. I'm pretty sure that quantum physics is something that only individuals are going to. I think that species are barred from participating in quantum physics as a whole.
Right now in terms of,
at least I have yet to meet a species.
I'm gauging this in terms of philosophy adds to what people can learn, what people know, what we know as a species, and what we have access to learning through books as individuals.
Thank you, Sherlock Holmes.
And scientific empirical experimentation is done in order to prove something true or false. Mm-hmm. If it's true, then it goes into that bank. It goes into truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of truth that we know. Insofar as quantum physics goes, if it's mm-hmm. merely just theory, and it's always just going to produce more theory, then it's worthless, and we should focus on something that may produce truth. That we can be certain of, that we know of, that we have access to.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you define truth that we know of and that we have access to? What precisely does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right, what do I mean by, okay, what do I mean, okay.
I could take it Freudianly.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is anything about the universe, meaning all things created or all things that are.
Okay.
So far we have the intent, yeah. So that's the entirety of the subjects of speculative philosophy, theology, physics, chemistry, and underwater basket weaving.
Whatever can be known in that category.
Okay.
For sure. That can be known for sure.
Well, John, what can be known for sure?
All right. Are you going to get into Cartesianism with me? Because I can drag us down.
No, I'm not even getting into Cartesianism. I'm actually getting into empiricism.
Okay.
Modern science works things out not through experimentation. This could be no other way, but this is statistically probable for it to be in any other way.
All right.
We know about gravity. The fact is, gravity is. Our current theories of gravity are less well proven than our current theories of evolution. They're less well proven than many other theories. Everything we supposedly know about science is only probably true.
Okay.
Some of it's very, 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 very likely true. All of it is, in fact, but all of it is only probably true. It's all theory that is probably true.
Yeah, but given enough time, and given the right physical conditions, you would probably be able to verify it without any way. So those sorts of things.
Not necessarily.
In the end, even if they're not 100% sure, that actually reduces the argument in favor of philosophy. Because if even empirical observation is not even 100% sure, philosophy sure as hell isn't going to be 100% sure. And why should you spend that much more time on something that much less reliable?
And now we get into epistemology, and this is even more fun.
The problem here, John, is that you're going into a matter of relativeness. It's less reliable, it's more reliable.
That's what I started on. I basically said, I never said philosophy wasn't true, or I never said we couldn't come to the true, or even that the truths that they found that are in philosophy are not true or not even important, but I don't see how they're as worthwhile. You see, it doesn't. I don't understand why on earth I want to spend years of my looking at exactly many angels can dance on the head.
Well, that's not something. Yeah, that's not something in the realm of philosophy. So.
It precisely is in the realm of philosophy, Sean.
It is in the realm of philosophy.
Not particularly so.
Unless if you're denying the existence of angels as beings.
Or pens.
Yeah.
if you're going to relegate angels specifically to the theology, that means you're essentially mm-hmm. saying that there are certain physical beings that theology holds mm-hmm. that philosophy cannot exempt, mm-hmm. which essentially means that from philosophy standpoint, or even from mm-hmm. logic standpoint, angels are pipe dreams made up by God or made up by religious
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that the question of how many immaterial beings can dance on the head of a pin is not relative to philosophy in the same way that a question of how to fit this square peg into this round hole is not a matter of philosophy. It's very much, absolutely, a matter of just practical speculation. When you have 10,000 angels over for a night of dancing, you have to know whether you need one or two pins, just as the man with the square hole and the round peg needs to figure out exactly how he's going to get the one into the other.
So
that way his boat doesn't sail away.
You're going to define for me then that philosophy is practical speculation?
No, I think he just defined it as speculation. I think he just confirmed pointing to Mr. Graham here.
Which is...
Yes.
Which is what?
Which mm-hmm. is that Aristotle's problem is that he's chasing mm-hmm. purely impractical knowledge for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
so he's doing a very impractical service and is wasting his mm-hmm. time, as well as
yeah.
the time of...
Mm-hmm. at the time of millions of other people. But you see, here's the thing. What Mr. Graham seems to be defining as useless knowledge is knowledge here which does not have a use beyond itself. And the first thing that of course, that comes to mind is, do you know that a unicorn in my imagination has three purple hairs in its tail? It's useless knowledge. You can't do anything with that knowledge except perhaps, you know, laugh at me.
Yes.
Because, of course, the unicorns in your mind have four purple hairs in their tails. But, you see, that wasn't what Aristotle went out looking for. He didn't go out looking for the most useless piece of knowledge that he could possibly find, because if he was looking for it, he'd already found it.
No, but, you see...
You know? It's nothing. It's pretty darn useless.
It's not, Aristotle wasn't defining it as whatever's more abstract is more useless, but he is. He's making the equation here that whatever's more abstract is more useless. It seems for him that, like, mm-hmm. the more removes you get, the more useless it is.
The more what?
I don't think that's true, but I do think there are some areas of abstract that are not all that useful.
Okay. Here's the thing. It's not useful, necessarily, for the general man to know how many electrons there are in a single grain of salt. That's a pretty useless bit of information to know, the average number of electrons in a grain of salt. But if we're going to look at this from a perspective that includes our Catholicity, we do have to remember that part of what the Creator gave us was that grain of salt with those electrons, and that learning something about that, provided that this is not taking away from your ability to truly give yourself to God, is a good thing. The study of the stars is not an evil, because it takes away time from your praying. Dissection of animals is not evil, because it takes time away from meditation. Different people are called to different things. All are called to be saints, but in different manners, modes, and by different means. And so in that way, learning things about the world, most essentially in the being of things, the essence of things, and coming to an understanding of God from the ground up, even while being taught about him from the top down, is an incredibly practical piece of habit to be developing.
Now, Sean, I want to stop you there. You mentioned unicorns as a piece of impractical knowledge. I have a counter to that. All right. Posted you the link.
All right, let's see what this is all about here.
Yes.
Sonovivich. I don't even dare. Okay, we're going to have to put these up afterwards so that way people can see what we're looking at. What am I looking at? What? Yeah.
That's... Andrew, you've about painful, done yourself man. This night. All right, and Sean... Google does not tell me how many electrons are in an average grain of salt, but it does tell me how many atoms there are. It's 1.2 times
good.
10 to the 18th power.
The longness of my rant aside, basically, the point is that if we want to take this from a Catholic perspective, there's no such thing as useless knowledge, and knowledge of those things, the way things are most essentially... is
I think you could have you had knowing sold me on the importance of the knowledge and how it's good to study, but I would still take issue with your use of the term practical for
it. Okay,
because I think the argument is made stronger if you basically say
all right,
not all knowledge needs to be practical, and that there are good knowledges, even better knowledges than some others that are practical that are not. That there are some impractical knowledges that are just better. You know, it's the Martha and Mary question. It's the missionary versus the cloistered question. You know, is that who has the better portion? The one who sits at the feet of the Lord, the one who's serving the guests. But both are needed.
Yeah.
But you kind of know at the end of the day who's got the better portion.
But you see, you know, in a sense, Mary is, and here's the problem, while it's more speculative, it's more prayerful, at the same time, because that's our final destination, and that's what Mary's called to, it's more practical for her at the same time, in order to accomplish her end, which in this case is sitting with the Lord eternally. In that sense, but you see, the thing is, to say, okay, we're going to divide these two areas of knowledge into those things which are practical and those things which are impractical, most people are going to take that as, well, so what you're saying then is we have things over here that we can do things with, and then we have things over here which we can do nothing with at all. And that, I think, is a bad way of dividing knowledge, because you're going to be stuck with that in a case where you're dealing with someone who is not going to accept any tenets of Catholicism. You say, okay, yes, no, there are certain things. Let's divide knowledge then into two groups: those which we can obtain demonstrable, practicable effects in the world, and those which we can't. All right. So we have our practical and our speculative knowledge. All right, and that's the way that philosophy has always divided it, because philosophy always comes from the ground up. All right, and says, all right, well, yeah, we've got this stuff over here which we can't do anything with. And there's some of it which is just obviously useless in the common sense of the word. You can't do anything with it. It doesn't give you anything when you have it. And you're no better off when you have it than when you didn't. But there's this other kind of speculative knowledge. No, we are up to almost an hour as of right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you should probably pack it in sometime soon. But yes, I stand corrected, and not to be cliche, because we're talking about philosophy, I'm going to have to do it anyway. Just so, Socrates.
There was...
Indeed, that is how things are.
Aye, but it can always be said very much better than the way I've said it.
I wrote about probably the dichotomy in my thesis.
There was a response to the article we quoted that was written beneath the article, or rather in the sort of comments on the article. Some men dude on the internet wrote this, There is a slight error here. When Aristotle makes this distinction, it is not between things that are useful and things that are not, but between things that are sought for their utility and things that are sought for their own sake. We make art supplies in order to make art. We make art because we like art. Aristotle pursued knowledge not because he wanted to use it, because he valued it for its own sake. Much like a programmer will write a program, not so that he can do his taxes with it or watch really cool videos, so much as because he enjoys the craft. The attitude that knowledge is not just a means to an end, but rather an end in and of itself today, is usually called curiosity. I think the lesson here is that people who aren't curious about questions that philosophy attempts to answer probably shouldn't study it to any great deal. It's just like people who don't like to program shouldn't become programmers and won't get anything out of it.
Do what you love and love what you do.
Exactly.
That seems to have hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, that's a decent sum. There's a little bit that he's left out of it as to the fact that it might actually be better to be a programmer than to not, in which case the pursuit of that love of programming would be something that should be sought.
You can't use an analogy for this, Sean.
Yeah,
because
encouraged.
Philosophy acts as sort of a meta whatever, to as kind of like for acquisition of knowledge. It's kind of like, artists if you're going to be studying art for its sake. You have programmers if you're studying programming for its sake. But if it's knowledge for knowledge's sake, that is philosophy.
Yeah.
So, in terms of it, you can't use the.
Exactly.
The analogy is going to be actually weaker than just stating the actual.
The analogies are going to be weak.
It's more misleading than actually just saying.
This is true.
Well, look, it's just saying the way
it's
philosophically formulated. So it's one of the few times when a philosopher will say something in a more straightforward way than an English major.
No,
it doesn't.
That should happen more often, but it doesn't. That's really too bad. But then, of course, you have to be able to reach out. Whereas if you're not a philosopher who's been very clearly called to teach, you might not be forced to reach out in the same way. And so you are allowed to be obtuse.
Really, that oftentimes philosophers become a club. It becomes a gnosis. Where you have this kind of like, we are in, we're on the inside, and all the other, poor, uneducated, unwashed masses are on the outside. And, this is kind of the way things are, which is a problem. It's a topic for another night, but
there's a whole lot
to the problem is that there's such a heavy amount of terminology to get into, a lot of terms of art that end up being used. Yeah. You ever notice that? Yeah. Term of art is a term of art. Term of art is a it's
and
a
so you
meta
wind up...
term of art.
Term of
it's
art
a self, it's a self-referential.
Yeah, it's a meta term. It's
not usually
term.
What they are. If they were, philosophy would be one gigantic recursive exercise.
It's evident. Yes. Philosophy would be self-evident. The minute you understood what was being talked about, you would understand it completely.
And then it really would be a waste
philosophy.
Of time. All right, so I think that's all for now. I can't
certainly
going on with this topic.
A very good
Andrew,
point.
Andrew, you did an excellent job choosing the topic. I salute you for pulling that
one. I think next time we should prep a little bit more, but okay.
It worked out well. It worked out well.
Okay.
Yeah. No, we definitely have a start here.
I'm
going to go ahead and steal all these things from you guys and then slam it all together into some kind of ugly.
No, you go ahead.
This is Andrew Stein, the beautiful Andrew Stein, yes.
Yeah.
The beautiful Andrew Stein.
This is Sean Vieira.
I am a beautiful man. I'm not embarrassed to admit this.
Andrew Stein, the beautiful man. And I'm John Connolly.
I'm very glad you're comfortable that way.